Hey folks, welcome. Susan here. Happy New Year. Welcome to our first call of 2020. So glad to have you folks here. Great to have you guys in the program. I am hoping that you all can hear me. Once you get on and get settled, if you would just type in the chat, say hello, and that way I will know that my audio is working properly. And if I don't get any chats, I know I have to take a look at that, but I think it's working. So just say hello and let me know that you can hear me okay. And if you'd like, we start out with a just for fun question. Hey, Valicia and Marie. Hello, hello. Hey, guys. Esther, welcome. Thank you. Thank you. If you are a goal setter, and I hope that you are, I hope that you've set some goals for yourself around your business in particular, but if you're willing to share a goal, hey, John. And Allison, hello, hello. Thanks for chiming in there. Hi, Sully. Haven't seen you in a bit. Welcome. Glad to have you here. So is there a goal that you've set for yourself in 2020? And it could be a business-related goal. It could be professional. It could be more on the personal side. Maybe you're going to train for a race or a competition of some kind. Would love to just hear what you have planned for 2020. Anything that you might be willing and comfortable sharing with the group. Would love to hear what you have in mind. And it can be a really small goal. It doesn't have to be anything massive and wildly profound. It can be quite simple. But would love to hear if you have anything on the radar for 2020. All right. Who else do we have? Oh, Taylor. Hey, hello there. Shannon, welcome. Alicia, Sally, I saw you as well. I want to give folks just a moment or two to join. And if you would type in the chat and say hello and let me know if you have a goal that you're planning to tackle in 2020. And I hope that everyone had good holidays, whatever kind of holiday you celebrate in the last month or so. That seems like the time of year where there's lots of different holidays for different folks. So hopefully you had a good holiday season and you're back in the program and back to work, focusing on moving forward. And Shannon says, business building production goals, a certain number of prospecting emails, clients each month, and to go to more networking events. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, great goals. That's wonderful, Shannon. And mixing it up is perfect. It's amazing how effective in-person networking events can be, especially when you're just getting started. It really gives you a little more because you get one of the things that's really nice about face-to-face. And even if you're an introvert, which I'm kind of, ambivert. I'm one of those. I'm a little bit of both. I could be very introverted when I set my mind to it. But one of the nice things about face-to-face networking is the instant feedback. So when someone, and when you get positive feedback, when you share with someone, hey, this is what I do, this is how I help small businesses or whatever target audience you're focused on, and they get excited about what you do, it really feels good. And it really is a boost to your, I guess, to your momentum. It can really kind of get you going and get you excited again. So don't overlook in-person networking events. Take advantage of them. They're fun to go to once you have your messaging kind of worked out and you know how you want to present yourself. They're really a lot of fun. Sally's going to be choosing her copywriting project, which I finally have. And I'm not quite sure I know what you mean by that, choosing my copywriting project, which I finally have. I think you might mean your copywriting audience, target audience. Not sure if I misread that, but Esther is going to join more networking groups in 2020, and Allison is going to create a marketing plan and get some clients. Absolutely. Sally, target audience and type of copywriting. There we go. Thank you. Thanks for clarifying. Got it. Yeah, target audience can take a little time. And one thing that I will share with you, because all of you are in this program and just getting started, is that target audience is something that I know when I started, my target audience, you know, I had chosen a target audience, so to speak, and it was smaller businesses, and that evolved over time. So give yourself the wiggle room to pick a target audience that you think is pretty close. It's maybe 75 or 80% close to a definite where you want to head. Don't expect it to be perfect right up front going out. The best thing to do is give yourself a chance to then start reaching out to this target audience to see how they respond, see what kind of needs they have. You may end up tweaking that a little bit as you go. So just, you know, be open to that taking shape as you progress. Felicia says she's going to get one client by February. Yes, you are. Awesome. That's a great goal. Steve, hi there. Didn't see you come on. Welcome. Steve says, I actually want to fully transition away from my job. Yeah, good for you. Good for you. That's a big goal and definitely something that would love to support you on. I went through that myself. I had a full-time job and was building this side writing gig. There's some things to think about. So if you have questions about that today or at any point, feel free to jump on Facebook and, you know, don't be afraid to put post your questions and let everyone else see them and let Ed and I help you out on that. Susan, hello there. She says 3 anchor clients. Good for you. That's a great goal. That is a great goal. Zelko, stabilize my writing business. Welcome. I didn't see you come on either, but welcome. Glad you're here. And that's a terrific goal for 2020 is to stabilize, is to kind of smooth things out. In the beginning, it's hard to do that. You know, you want to get there, but it can be a little bit challenging. So consistency is key, and consistency in your warm email prospecting and your marketing activities. That's really where it's all going to come together for you. Awesome. Well, I'm going to dive into our first question, my first question of the day. And for those of you who are new to the program, not sure if we've got a few folks that are new. I'm not sure if this is your first call or not, but what I do is I walk everyone through a set of questions and we start off easy and it's all stuff that you could just type in the chat. And I want to start with sharing a win. I'd ask you to type in a capital W in the chat and share a win that you've had. And hopefully, holidays can actually, the end of the year can actually be an interesting time. It can kind of get busy sometimes. But if you've got something small that you want to share, please type in a W. Let us know. We'd love to celebrate with you and give all of us a chance to celebrate. And I want to encourage everyone. We've got a nice group today. We've got about 15 people on the call, and that's awesome. Welcome to all of you. And I want to encourage you to be active in the chat and participate. This is a great opportunity for you to get your questions answered. And I will bring you on and unmute you if it's something that we want to have more of a deeper discussion on. And happy to do that. So don't be shy. Use this opportunity and take advantage of this. And I'm glad that you're here to do that. So we've got a couple of wins. Steve says he's finally got the website built and reviewed. Excellent. That's right. Congratulations. That's a huge win, actually. A huge win. And Shannon says she's got her first face-to-face meeting with a prospect scheduled for tomorrow. Wow. That's a huge win, too. Shannon, congratulations. That's terrific. Please keep us posted in the Facebook group. I want to hear how that goes. So as soon as you get out, let us know how it went. And I hope that you've had a chance to, I'm not sure how far you are in the program, Shannon, but just take a quick look here. What session talks about the actual conversation? Hold on. So this session 6 talks a lot about qualifying, ballparking, just, how to talk about scripts for different, and shares a lot of scripts and questions for this conversation that you're going to have. So I'm hoping you were able to get there before and that you're somewhere near there anyway. Allison says, same as Steve, got my website built and reviewed and updated. Congratulations. Another huge win. That's great. Salise is still sending a number of prospecting emails to my network and on to session six. Good for you. Salise says, have fully covered recovered from a terrible December cold. That's a huge win. Oh my goodness. I got sick over the holiday too. Wasn't a cold. It was more of a stomach bug flu funky thing. And oh my goodness, I was so glad that I didn't have to try and juggle work. It was certainly didn't kind of put a damper on our Christmas, but it was okay. So and I recovered too. So good for you. Glad to hear you're feeling better. Esther's win today, spoke to a former colleague who gave me a shout out on LinkedIn to his network. Excellent. Oh, that's powerful. Have a potential prospect contact me as a result. Yay, Esther, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm doing a happy dance for you. That's terrific. LinkedIn is amazing. Oh my goodness. And what a cool way to pick up some new work. So good for you and keep us posted on that. John says, my website is done. I'll be submitting it tomorrow. Congratulations. We've got some big wins here. This is really cool. That's awesome. You guys didn't take a lot of time off over the holidays. That's great. Felicia, got my website reviewed. It was so helpful. Great. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm glad that was helpful. I really try to cover a lot of bases and they've been getting a little lengthier because I really want to make sure I cover things for people that are helpful. So thank you for the feedback. I appreciate that. Zelko says his win is better and more focused work on developing the writing business and better handling of unanticipated changes. Good for you. Focused. Focused is key, isn't it? It's amazing. Focus and scheduling. I find that scheduling is so helpful in the beginning, in particular when you're just anxious and trying to get a lot of things done and trying to get this off the ground. Scheduling and sticking to a schedule is really helpful too. So that's part of the focus that you've incorporated. Shannon says, sessions 6 and 7 are amazing. I've gone through both a couple of times now. Great. So it sounds like you're ready for your conversation tomorrow. Yay. Yeah, there's some great, great stuff in this whole program is, Ed is a master at pulling together not only the right information, but the right information for based on where all of you are in your journey in building your business. He's got the right amount of information that he feeds to you at the right speed, and it all comes together. He's quite a master at this. So good. I'm glad you found that. Glad you found that helpful. Awesome. 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 And for those of you, Shannon, you just answered. It sounds like you've been through most of the sessions. That's great. If anyone on the phone, on the call hasn't participated yet, I'd love for you to jump in and tell me what material you're implementing. And same thing, capital I, just so that I have a sense of, let me know, I'm still in session 2, or maybe I'm already at session 8, I'm, kind of wrapping up. Just give me an idea of where you are in the program, if there's anything in particular that you're trying right now, that maybe you're in session 4, or maybe you started reaching out to your network. I did see someone comment about that, still kind of reaching out to the network. Important step. Don't overlook it. Absolutely important. Don't skip that. Whatever you do. When I started, I had been running my business for a while and not terribly successfully. When I came across Ed and joined one of his programs, it was not this one. It was one because I had already been in business for a while. So I took a different program and he actually, recommended in that program to do the same thing, is to send an email out to your network. And I was so uncomfortable with that. That was way outside my comfort zone at the time. I was just thought, I can't do that. Oh my goodness. What if these people don't, I haven't talked to some of these people in years, and what if they don't like me, and what if they get upset? And I, filled my own head full of all this stuff. And then I finally did, and I apologize for anyone who's heard this story before, because I've told it a few times because it's just funny. It's funny to me when I think back. But I remember typing, putting the email together and getting the list and I was scared to pieces to hit send. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I'd be like, okay, email's ready. I just need to hit send. And I'd get up and run away from my desk. I couldn't bring myself to do it. And finally, I kind of sat myself down and said, look, you know, you're a grown woman. This is ridiculous. Just hit send. And I did. And the response was overwhelmingly positive. I can tell you that, you know, everyone's going to have a different experience, but my network, friends and family, people that I'd done business with years prior, overwhelmingly positive. And on top of that, I ended up getting a fair amount of work out of it, which I never saw coming. So I didn't anticipate. I ended up getting a huge project with one of my best clients that I worked for 2 years and made really good money. They were amazing. So it's just, you never know where that work's going to come from. So I strongly recommend that you, if you're kind of sidestepping the contacting my network thing, don't. It's, you know, if people don't want to respond, they won't respond. You know, if they're not interested in helping you or don't have anything to say, they won't. So don't worry about it. It's just an email and they can delete it if they want. So, all right, Esther, she is implementing, let me see, you've completed all the coursework. Congratulations. And still focused mainly on reaching out to network and cold prospects. Great. Allison said she's in session 5, planning to start session 6 tomorrow. Great. You'll enjoy that. That's going to be I think that's going to be as Shannon said, she's gone through those a couple of times. So I think you'll enjoy session 6. Elko says full-time prospecting and improving organizational skills. Excellent. And Valicia says she's in session 5 right now. Great. Great, great, great. Susan is working on LinkedIn. Great. Great tool. Great, great tool. Yeah, definitely take the time to understand that tool, go through the other videos that I did, and they're it's just good information to understand how LinkedIn works. All right, well, we've reached our question and answer portion of the call, and what I'd like you to do is type in a capital Q if you have a question. Keep it focused and specific. One question per person, and I'll come back to you if we need to. So don't worry about it. And I hope you came prepared with a couple of things that you wanna talk about and that you have questions about. And then tell me what an option or two that you might be considering in order to address it. And Shannon jumped right in. That's okay. I am going to start. Let me just see. I think Taylor is here. And Taylor, thank you. You pre-submitted a question. So Shannon, I'm just going to hop over to that real quick and answer those questions. She actually pre-submitted 2. Taylor's first question, I see that a number of your students are AWAI verified or certified, which they display prominently on their websites. How critical is this? And does this drive prospects to hire them more frequently? I've gone through the accelerated program, but haven't taken their test. Should I be focused on doing that as part of my learning? So Taylor, that's really a very personal choice for you. If it's something you think, I think it's personal from the perspective of, is it the type of writing that you're going to be doing where this is going to become an important component. So if the kind of writing that you're going to be and the type of clients that you're going to be supporting, if it's important to them, then it should be important to you. That said, I think, I can't remember. I it's a real mix, honestly, Taylor, of people who've been verified or certified and people who haven't. And I would probably say, and this isn't going to help you really all that much, but it's probably 50-50 in terms of its importance. So again, it really depends on the audience that you're focused on, your target audience and your target market, and whether or not it's going to be important to them. And that's, you know, I fall back on that all the time. And Ed would say the same thing is, you know, it's not so much what's important to us, it's what's important to the people you're going to be calling on. Is this going to make a difference for them? I can tell you that as writers, people are familiar with AWAI, but outside of the writing community, it may not be as prominent, again, depending on the audience that you're after. So think more about what's going to be important for them. And this is something you can always do, Taylor, at a later date if you decide. You can always, you know, dive in, start prospecting, working with the audience that you want to work with, and see how it goes. But I had a gentleman ask in another group just recently about getting a master's degree in, I think, in technical writing or something like that. And again, I advised him the exact same way. Is that going to be important to the target audience? And I suggested that he actually do some research into that to find out if he had any contacts. He was lucky enough that he had contacts already in the target market that he was going to be calling on. And I suggested, I said, reach out to some of your connections and ask them the question. Ask them how important that is. They're the ones that are going to help you to make that choice. And so, Taylor, I would suggest that as you're just getting started, you're just kind of diving in here, I would kind of see how it goes, because it's an investment of money. It's an investment of time. I think there's more learning that has to be done around that certification. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't been part of that in years, so I'm not sure what the criteria is or what the requirements are. But I would let the audience that you're going to be calling on, let them be the guide for you in making that decision, that kind of final decision on that. And then she had a second question. What's the best way to show potential clients that you know how to write case studies when you have no sample case studies to show them, or any type of marketing content, not just case studies? All right. So I am going to, in the chat, share with you. Let me just put that down here. So I am going to share with everyone this link. And one of the best places to go for information about that kind of a question, especially on samples, Ed's, if you go to B2B Launcher website and go to the articles and just type in the word samples, there's two articles that come up at the top. This is the second article that comes up in the results. The first one is just talking about what if you don't have any samples. And the best thing to do, what Ed recommends in that first article, it's very short. What he recommends is that you see if you can find an opportunity to do some pro bono work. And in the beginning, it is the best way to get samples to build your portfolio, is to do a little bit of pro bono work. And notice I say a little. I don't want you to fill your calendar with pro bono work. We want to be selective, but go out and find a few clients that will, and they're out there. Some of the smaller businesses, you might think about targeting a couple of startups or smaller businesses that may or may not have the budget or may have a reduced budget, that you could offer to do some pro bono work. So that's one of the quickest and easiest ways to start building your portfolio. The link that I just provided for you, Taylor, is a link to an article where Ed actually he walks you through this whole process to help you actually avoid getting into this scenario of where a client or a prospect is asking for referrals or asking for samples and all this other stuff. It's just a way to talk to the client to help really hone in on what it is that they need, and kind of make them disarm them a little bit. And I think sometimes that the people that we call on are it's just common, and they're just always just, oh yeah, send me some samples. It might be that they're trying to get you off the phone. It might be that they don't want to tell you no, and they're just kind of delaying that. There's a lot of reasons why people ask for samples. Sometimes they really want to see them. They really are. Maybe it's a big project. They want to make sure they have the right person. So there's a whole host of reasons why someone would ask for samples. But I recommend that you check out that. I recommend that you check out that that video, that particular article, and he walks you through just a really nice way to qualify and help to guide the prospect to say, you know, here's a way to get them from point A to point B to that conversation of, all right, let me give you a, you know, let me give you a price for that project and get started, so that the sample isn't quite as critical. In the beginning, honestly, the best thing to do is see if you can get a couple. And that is something that might come from your network too. So either it's reaching out to people in your network that, check out to see who's working where. Maybe that's something where, and you want to be careful about, and Ed talks about pro bono work, but it's something that it's something that you would want to offer for one single project once, and preferably a smaller project, is to say, look, I am happy to do this one blog article for you pro bono, so that we can figure out if we are a good fit, if we will work well together, if you're happy with my work. And the other thing too is to be honest upfront always about the fact that, look, I'm just launching. I've been writing for a long time. I'm comfortable as a writer, and I know my skill is solid. And with you having taken the copywriting course, same thing. Look, I've taken courses. I've been teaching. I've been learning. I know my writing is solid, but I'm just getting started in my business. So being able to talk honestly about that with the prospect and saying, look, you know, I'd be more than willing to do one or two pieces for you pro bono, so that we can both, you can decide whether or not I'm the right fit. And it gives me a chance to prove that I am, and to give me samples. So that's the kind of the thinking behind that. But I strongly suggest you take a look at the other article with the, he's got a little video embedded in there too. And Sally, sorry, see everybody, see you. Sally, sorry you had to leave. I saw your note. All right, we got a whole bunch of questions here. So Taylor, I hope those my answers were helpful. And I am gonna jump back all the way to Shannon, you're next. And no worries about the long question. Shannon says, I have a meeting with a prospect tomorrow that's interested in to hear what types of content marketing materials I can recommend for their company. Hey, yay, good for you. After doing more research on the business, I think I'm settling on suggesting a monthly case study, highlighting a different customer and product each month. I think something like this would be a perfect fit for them. However, I've never done a case study before and want to have something to show them as an example. I think a visual would go further than just me explaining what one is. Can you recommend a good place to find quality case study examples? Also, since I'm just starting out, but it would be great to secure a multi-month contract, I'm thinking of starting with a contract for 6 months at $800 per case study, with the option to extend to 12 months with an increase to maybe $1,000 per study for the latter half of the year. How does that pricing contract sound right off the bat? So great question, and congratulations, this is really exciting. So one thing that I would do in regards to this client in particular, this prospect, is, and this is for everyone that's just starting out, is that we tend to want, I totally understand you wanting to jump right in, oh, let's nail down a multi-month thing. What I would recommend is that you, I don't know if you've heard the saying, slow down to speed up. I think what would be better is for you to take a step back and come up with a price, because you're new, because you don't have a case study example of your own. What you would want to do, and I don't know your relationship with this client, but what I would suggest is that you instead say, how about I create a case study for you, either at a reduced rate or pro bono? And again, that's up to you, maybe at a reduced rate. Let's just agree to do one and let's see how it goes. Let's see if you like it. Let's see if it works for you. That kind of thing. And here's the reason that I say that is because you also want to make sure that this doesn't turn out to be what we affectionately call the customer from hell. And so sometimes, you know, it's all good. Everybody's smiling and shaking hands in the conversations. It's great. Yeah, we're excited to work with you. And then they don't get the down payment to you, or they really drag their feet paying you in the end, or they don't give you the information that they say. You know, all of a sudden the wheels come off, and it just, the relationship isn't what it started out to be. The honeymoon's over, so to speak. So I would recommend that you take this just a little bit slower. Maybe agree to do 2 or 3 case studies at a reduced rate. And then if they like what you've done, then at that point you would come back and that's when you would say, all right, I think if 1 a month makes sense to you, how about if I propose a multi-month contract and go from there? It'll give you a chance also. The other good thing is that it gives you a chance to figure out, because you're throwing out some numbers here to me, 800 per case study. That seems a little bit low to me, but I can tell you that without any firsthand experience with this client, it's really going to be hard for you to put a number on that. And the reason I say that is that case studies, how cooperative are they going to be? In regards to getting you the information that you need, are they going to be providing any details? How is this all going to work? And until you get to know that a little and get some experience under your belt with writing a case study, with understanding, chasing someone down to set up an interview, right? The client that their client is, that's not as easy, easier said than done. finally nailing it down. I can tell you, I've done a lot of this, and sometimes you get someone on the phone and they're completely distracted and they're not paying attention and they keep, hold on, and you can hear them talking to someone else in the room. So getting the information you need can be really challenging. So what I would again recommend is for you to use this as a teaching opportunity for yourself to learn, okay, how does this work? What's the best way for me to approach it? Because then what you don't want to do is paint yourself into a corner saying, oh, I have a 6-month contract and I way underpriced myself for the situation that I now find myself in. Don't want to see that happen. I would recommend that you do a much shorter term right up front, 1 case study, 1 to 3, somewhere in that neighborhood, at a reduced rate. Say, look, I'm going to do a reduced rate because we're brand new to each other. And I want to make sure that way we can make sure that we get the most out of that we're the right fit for each other. So I hope that helps. I think that that's just a safer way, if you will, to go into this, because you don't know all the variables. You don't know how long it's going to take you. You don't know what kind of if they've never used a case study before, they're not going to know what they like or don't like. So they're not going to be able to give you a ton of guidance. You might have to come up with something and say, here's what I came up with. You may have to rewrite it a couple times. There's a lot of unknowns. So I would not lock myself into a longer term arrangement right up front. As far as finding samples, I would go to other writers' websites. Honestly, see if you can find some competitors. And I hate to do that, but there's plenty of examples out there, honestly. And I would get maybe 2 or 3 different styles of case study. I've seen 1-page, I've seen multi-page, I've seen more pictorial based or more image based and less text or content, more content and 1 image, that kind of thing. There's all different ways to do that. I'd just go out and do a search on case studies and see what you find. I don't really have a specific place for you to go, but do a Google search and see what you come up with. You might find something that you feel safe. You could also look at case studies from educational institutions, like maybe there's a college or something like that. That's kind of safe. You can, share that. Maybe there's a case study from a university or a college that is just going to give you, that you can share with them, that'll give them the outline and give them a feel for what a case study can do. So I hope that's been helpful. I hope that makes sense. All right. I'm going to move on to Esther. Hey, Esther. Her question is, I am not having as much success on LinkedIn finding contact information for prospective clients. It seems that people are limiting their information. Is anyone else finding this to be a challenge? So Esther, LinkedIn doesn't give you the contact information until you become a first level connection with the individual. There are softwares out there. There are software tools that are almost like an overlay or an add-on kind of a tool There's a couple different kinds. I believe I used to use one that was free, believe it or not, but that was a while back. And what this add-on does is that when you bring up a person's profile, it allows you to search the internet for their website, for their email address. It's kind of interesting. So I would take a look. I know that there is, let me just pause for a moment here. In regards to the tools. So there's a handout in session 5, and it's the email prospecting session about tools for finding and verifying prospect email addresses. I'm sure there's some information in there, but there are other tools also that will literally kind of are an add-on to LinkedIn. They aren't a LinkedIn product, but they're a tool that is, you know, usually developed by a third party that works with LinkedIn. And there usually is a cost, but that's one option. But just know that you have to be a first level connection in order to actually see their email address. And sometimes people don't fill in a lot on the contact information anyway. You become a first level connection and they don't have a whole lot in there, or they might have a personal email address instead of a work one, that kind of thing. So really, you know, again, everybody uses LinkedIn a little differently. Not everybody uses it the way we do to find prospects and contact people. So the best thing, honestly, Esther, is to reach out directly through LinkedIn. Is to, you know, send a message if you can, or an invite. An invite's the best way to start. All right. Steve is next with a question. And he says, I know we only get one formal website review. We are all focused on our own work, so we only look at others for comparison or ideas. I'm wondering if someone else at the same stage as me, reviewed and revising, would want to pair up to do a peer review of the second round. So that's a great question, Steve, and a great idea. I would recommend that you take that and post it in the Facebook group. Just post it generally. Don't put it in the Q&A section, but put it just out there. Just say, hey, anybody want to swap reviews? Anybody who's already had their, you know, second round, you know, are already reviewed and edited and that kind of stuff. That's a great idea. Great suggestion. But that's where I would recommend that you put it right in the Facebook group. Shannon says, I think you just answered the majority of my question through answering Taylor's. Yay. Good. That's why we're on the call all together. It's amazing. All of you are going to be experiencing similar things, and that's why we have these calls, so that you can all benefit from the questions and what you hear, some ideas. Hopefully it'll give you some good ideas. So great. Awesome. Allison, you're up next. Yeah, and Shannon says, great advice. Thank you. I get wrapped up in things. Stepping back is a bit of an immediate stress reliever. Absolutely. You know, that first call, that first meeting with a real live client, that someone that actually wants to talk to you, it is stressful. And it really does feel, we tend to build that stuff up in our heads. But just, you know, go in saying, you know what, let's start slow. Let's take this a step at a time. Let's do a small project and make sure that way we're both sure that this is going to work. And by the way, Shannon, if you decide to do that, I'd use the 800 for the case study as your discounted rate, by the way. I strongly suggest that, because depending on the project, depending on how big that case study is, they might want, once you get them hooked on it, they might want something. Geez, you know, we want 3 pages. We want this, we want that. We want you to talk with, you know, more. We want it to be more in depth. Are they going to help develop the questions? You know, it's interesting. So I'd start with that as your discounted rate. just a thought, and go with whatever you're comfortable with. But that might be just something to think about. All right, Allison, back to you and your question. I have a wide niche, software and technology, and I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed and unsure how to start identifying good prospects. I'm wondering if I should start with local companies. Do you think that's a good way to go? So Allison, great question. And software technology is huge and broad. So I understand your sense of overwhelm. What you might want to think about as, and I love the idea of starting with local companies. Working face-to-face can be, you know, being able to, you know, go in and meet people face-to-face, go to their location, get a feel for their environment. All of that can be really helpful when you're writing for somebody. So I think that's a great way to go to get started. But what you might want to think about, there's a lot of different ways to narrow that niche down a little bit. And maybe it's company size. So you might start with where you're just getting started. Maybe you're looking at, you're working specifically with companies that have, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 employees, something like that. I would be careful about startups because startups don't always have the budget for what we, for the services we provide. So we want to be just cautious about that. But there's other ways to narrow that down that wouldn't eliminate, you know, a huge chunk of the business. I mean, software and technology, those two, if you set them completely apart, they're both huge and there's so much that comes in under that. Just was talking with someone recently about SaaS and how that used to be a niche and it's not, because underneath SaaS now there's all these diverse different types of technology and offerings that it's really gotten much very complex. So that used to be a niche. It isn't any longer as narrow, certainly not very narrow. So think of this the same way, is maybe think, turn it around and say, you know what, I really enjoy helping companies that are in growth mode. So maybe that's, 50 to 100 or 50 to 200 employees. They're really just getting their legs under them and growing. And it's really exciting for me to help them develop their message so that they can grow into that Fortune 500 company or something like that. Fortune 100, who knows? But anyway, so maybe think of it that way, Allison, is just kind of taking it from a different perspective. Or the other thing that I would recommend is that you start with some local companies and try some things. And again, this is going to evolve with time, over time. And I mentioned that at the beginning of the call, is that, you know, we start out with a target market, but that's going to evolve. You're going to get in and realize, ooh, I really don't like doing that kind of work, or geez, that's maybe not, I'm finding that the companies that I'm calling on aren't really interested in what I have to offer, or whatever the case may be. The thing that you might come across as you start moving down this path, as you just start getting out there and talking to people, is you realize, ooh, there's a sweet spot. There's a particular software or technology that you just really get, that you really enjoy, you enjoy writing about, that's fun. Maybe the companies that you're dealing with are really awesome. They're willing to pay you and don't have a problem with paying you, that kind of thing. You know, there's you're going to find that as you go. You can't find it day one. So don't expect to find the perfect fit day one. You're not going to go out of the gate with the perfect fit. I think that comes with time, that just it's going to evolve for you as you start talking to people and picking up projects. You're going to come to realize, oof, I really don't like doing that kind of stuff. Like for me, there were certain things that were high pressure things. I didn't particularly care to do like sales landing pages or email campaigns that they were looking for a return. I know those are worth a lot of money, that writers get paid big dollars for emails that convert and web, sales landing pages that convert. Not my thing. And it wasn't until I started getting deeper into it that I realized, if this is just not for me. So I think it's a matter of a combination of things. Start with your locals, see if you can pick up a few projects with local companies, and go from there, see what happens. Start asking for referrals. If you get a great project and that local company is really happy with you, ask for referrals. Who else do you know that might benefit from working with me? That kind of thing. So, and then see where that takes you. All right. Great question. And Esther, I need to go back and review session 5 and needs to drop off the call. Sorry to see you go, but have a great day. All right. Susan, you're up next. Do you have any techniques or ideas on pricing? I'm struggling to find price points in my market for various writing materials. All right. Susan, I actually am hoping that you're in a place where you can talk. I'd like to unmute you because I do have a question for you on this. Let me see if I can find you. Hey, Susan, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hello. Hi there.
Hi there.
So tell me a little bit about, I'm not clear what you mean by various market writing materials. Do you mean projects?
Exactly.
Help me out there.
When I'm prospecting, you know, trying to, you know, get a prospect into a client, I have a really difficult time. I'm in my market because I'm in France and I'm pitching to, you know, French companies that need their work in English. And I have a really difficult time trying to figure out the price points that will work for them because they're not similar to the U.S. The U.S. much higher. And I just have a really hard time trying to figure out what people are, you know, accustomed to in the terms of the pricing. In the U.S., I can figure it out because there's lots of Facebook groups of other, you know, fellow B2B writers that I, you know, interchange with. But, you know, I just have a really difficult time trying to figure out the right, you know, the right price point so I don't scare them off.
Right, right. Have you pitched any French companies and gotten any feedback of any kind?
Well, I tend to, the client that I have now, I pitched a bit low in order to get the work so that I could, you know, at least start to work with them because I want to, you know, eventually, you know, build them into an anchor. And I have proposed, you know, follow-on work and, you know, for example, for doing case studies. And, you know, I pitched what I thought was a fair price for the French market, which would be considered very low, I think, for the U.S. And I have a feeling there's a bit of reluctance.
Huh.
So I'm just trying to kind of figure out what kind of techniques, I guess, you know, you can kind of use to kind of figure out what you know, when you're starting to, you know, propose your services to clients, how do you kind of figure out the right price points in,
right,
your specific market?
It's definitely a challenge.
What I figured.
Yeah, it really is. No, and you have a unique challenge because of the, obviously doing business in a different country, but
right.
Is it something where you could go back to this client and follow up and say, you know, if you don't want to do it, it's okay, but I just want some feedback. Like
hesitation? Yeah.
I would. But also, the tough part is you don't want to use just them as the one, you know, experience or the one, you know, their budget just isn't there. The other thing that would be best probably is, especially in pitching, is at least even before you actually put anything on paper, is to start talking about a range. And I don't know if you did that with these people or not with this client, but start by saying, so this project would be anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500 or something like that, just as an example. And then gauge their response. Like if they go, ooh, you know, then you know, okay, is that higher than, you know, is it too high or where, you know, what's your budget, and start having that budget conversation so that you can get a better sense right up front. Like, okay, this is, you know, we were thinking we were going to pay $200 for that. And you're suggesting 1500. Well, we're way too far off. You know, that's way too far off versus if they said, well, we were thinking like 800 and you said 1000, you could kind of get a sense of, are they, you know, where are they and where's their mindset and what's their budget? I mean, the budget question is so important right up front before you put any pricing in front of somebody, is to just say, what's your budget for this? How many times have you done it before? What have you paid in the past? Or what, you know, what's your, they've got to have a budget. They've got to have a number in mind that they know they can afford. And I've had this happen to me so many times where I've said, do you have a budget? I had a referral. It was someone that I've known for a while, and they, I said, so what's your budget for this project? Oh, well, we don't really have a budget. Like, really? So I gave them a price, and they were furious with me. Well, I asked you what your budget was. You know, I did my part here, folks. So, you know, and sometimes that's, if you, if they say, I don't have a budget, then what the next thing to say, what I learned is to say, well, typically this will run you anywhere between X and Y. And then gauge there, is that within a reasonable boundary for you? You know, is that within a reasonable rate for you? And then you can have an intelligent conversation from there. So if they say they don't have a budget, it's okay. But here's what this typically runs. This kind of project usually runs X to Y. Is that within your range of affordability?
And just, go from there. Just as a follow-on question, how do you find that range, though? You know, by talking with fellow writers, or do you? How did you kind of come up with the range? That's kind of one of my dilemmas too.
I agree. So I would use. Let me see. What session are you on in the program? Are you?
I'm on either 5 or 6. I kind of go between the two.
Let me just see. Okay, so 7. Master. Okay, so 6 has the Ed's master fee schedule. Mm. Have you seen that? It's a handout in session 6, qualify and ballpark.
Yeah.
So what I would do is take that master fee schedule, use that as the baseline, and then for your prospects in France, maybe take a percentage off. Mm. And to a certain extent, you're going to have to just try it. You know, exactly. You're guessing. You're kind of guessing, and oftentimes, and that's the hard part in the beginning is, oh my gosh, you know, I have no idea what to charge for this. But I would take use that as the guide, his master fee schedule, and then just say, all right, I'm going to knock 20% off of that for my French, for any company in France that I propose. Mm-hmm. And give them a range that's, because I think there's some ranges on his master fee schedule too, I believe. It's the same thing, just knock that whole range down 20% or something like that, and see how that goes. Because and it's going to be a little bit of trial and error, unfortunately, with especially in France. I mean, I wish I had a better answer for you, but I think it's, you already know that there's a price difference that you've got to have to, you know, you're going to be charging less. The thing is, you know, maybe focus on trying to work with clients in the U.S. so that you can, you know, really and truly, if you can get paid 20% more, then why not, right?
But this really helps me a lot because it helps create the dialogue.
Yes, that's exactly. Now, do you speak French that you're able to communicate comfortably
with? Oh, yeah. No, I'm fluent in the tin.
Oh, good for you. That's cool. How long have you been there?
A long time.
Have you? Okay. Great. Well, I think it's a matter too. Another thing, Susan, to keep in mind is, you know, what are your goals? And do you want to work with French companies? Yeah. And if so, maybe there's a level that you need to be targeting. So maybe you've been working with companies that are, I mentioned earlier about, you know, like 500 to 200, I mean, 50 to 200 employees. You know, take a look at the size company that you've been targeting and see if maybe if I level up, maybe I can get closer to the project rates that I know I'm worth and that I know that the work is worth.
Yeah, so that's a good idea.
Play around with that a little bit. Just be aware of the kinds of companies that you're talking to, see what they're, you know, how big are they? How sophisticated are they? That makes a difference too when you start. Because the smaller companies might not have the budget one way or another. And obviously you're finding out that they pay less. So I'd split the difference. And again, depending on what your goals are for working with companies in France. But I would think that you would be a tremendous asset to the companies who want their information written well in English. I think I would think you'd be a tremendous asset. Because French and English, I was actually a French major for a little while in my life and ended up graduating with an English degree. But I entered college as a French major, so I know the translation can be wonky. It's not a clean, because of the word order and the way that things go. I think you've got a real advantage being, your English is so good, and you're able to, if you're that comfortable and you're fluent in both, then I would think you'd be a really valuable resource that they'd be willing to pay for. So it might be just leveling up. I think that might be something to try.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, good luck, and definitely please keep us posted in the Facebook group. That's really cool.
Okay.
All right. Great question and cool. I love it when I hear people working in other countries. We have a lot of people from around the world in this program, as well as some of Ed's other programs. So it's really awesome. Awesome, awesome to hear about that. All right. Great questions today and great participation. Thank you, thank you, thank you for everyone coming with questions and being a part, being an active part of the call today. That's what makes these calls so helpful. So as a matter of fact, I've got another question here, but before we do that, I'm just going to ask what's been most valuable? And Zelko, I see your question. I'll get to that in just a minute, but I wanted to take a break here and just ask, get a little bit of feedback. Is there anything that we've talked about in our call today that's already, we're zipping right along here. Anything that we've talked about that's really kind of been helpful, most valuable so far. So type in a V so that I know it's just you're responding to this question, and let me know if there's anything in particular that has been helpful. We've talked a lot about pricing today, and I know that's probably one of the biggest challenges when you're starting out is trying to figure out how much do I charge and what makes sense. So, and to some extent, it's a bit of a guess, unfortunately, but I know Ed's fee schedule is super helpful. We give you a good baseline to get you started. It might be a little bit high, the prices there, just a smidge high for you as someone starting out, but it'll still give you a good feel for what going rates are for most of what you're going to be working on. All right, Shannon says, slow down to speed up. Absolutely. I learned that a long time ago when I was in sales. I was in a retail sales position that I had, and one of my manager always said that, slow down to speed up. And it was a big ticket. I was actually, believe it or not, selling cars at the time. And so it was slow down. But what I find is that it translates well to lots of situations, especially in sales. And hey, John, thanks for letting me know. Glad you were here. Take care. John's leaving, jumping off the call. All right. Susan said, pricing is prospecting, narrowing your niche down to avoid being overwhelmed. That's been valuable. Valicia says, confirmation that pricing is a serious guessing game in the beginning. It can be. It absolutely can be. And Allison says, what she's found valuable so far is suggestions for having pricing conversations. Great. Great. Thank you, folks. All right, I'm going to go back to Zelko and his question. As a beginner, I feel it is much easier to focus on and access small companies in the software, IT, and technology industry. Any suggestion based on experience to go this direction or to include larger companies in prospecting? So yes, I would try a couple different things. I'm a fan of testing. And this is something that both Ed and I talk about a lot, is that sometimes this is a little bit of trial and error, so to speak, when you're first getting started. You're just trying to figure out what's going to work. And like I just suggested earlier, let me see. Where am I? So Susan, you and I were just talking about this, is trying leveling up. And we talk a lot about that. So imagine, sit back and think for a moment about where you are and what you need right now. And so I really recommend that you do this from a strategic perspective. So for example, I have just, I'm early in this program. I'm just getting started. I don't have a lot of samples and I'm trying to get my business off the ground. What do I need right now, right this moment? What could I use in the next month or so that would help my business the most? And the things that would help my business the most are some pro bono work to help me gain experience, to help me build a portfolio so that I have some samples to share, and to help me to learn how to tackle something like a case study or how to tackle a blog article series for a client or an email campaign for a client. So what I suggest is that you think about your business in stages and think about this as temporary. You know, keep in mind that what you're doing isn't going to be, well, you know, once you decide, okay, I'm going to try some pro bono work and I'm stuck here. No, you're not. It's quite the contrary. What I would recommend is that you think about, all right, I would like to pick up maybe 2 pro bono projects between now and March 1st. Maybe that's a goal for yourself. What does that look like? Actively seek those. Be thinking about that. Obviously, making money is number one, and we want to get paying clients. And I would recommend that you not express, hey, I want to, you know, a pro bono project, but approach people with the willingness to offer your services pro bono. It's not something you're going to advertise, but you're going to have that kind of in your back pocket, because you know that this important part of this process is learning and going through that and getting those first couple of clients, getting those first few projects. If you can get even small amounts of pay, it's fabulous. It makes a big difference. But always kind of keep that in your back pocket and have that to pull out and say, you know what, I really want this work. I'd be happy to do one project for you for as a trial and see how it goes. So then the next step is, okay, I've got, you know, a client, maybe I've got 1 or 2, I've got some projects, I'm feeling a little more comfortable. The next stage is maybe I'm calling on smaller businesses because I do want to start getting paid. And then, you know, focusing on it's a local companies, maybe they're a little bit smaller, they feel comfortable because they've met me in person, I've created a good connection with this business owner, and they hire me. Not the price point I want to be working at forever, but again, it's a stage. It's just a part of the growth and the learning for you. So yep, I got way underpaid. I did that for quite a while myself in the beginning. I worked for an agency. I was so underpaid and I worked so hard. It was awful, awful from a personal perspective. I worked super hard and got tiny little paychecks. It was crazy, but I learned so much. It was invaluable, honestly. The money wasn't even the important part for me. It was the learning. And of course I wanted to have the money because I wanted to get out of my full-time job as soon as possible, but it was just a necessary part of the process. The next step is to then say, okay, now I'm ready to mix in some bigger, I have the self-confidence, I have the momentum to mix in some bigger accounts. So now that doesn't mean that you have to wait to call on larger accounts. If you feel comfortable, I would encourage you to mix it up, mix and match, try things. This is, again, trial and error, a little experimentation. There's a little bit of see how the bigger companies respond to you at this point. They might push back and say, you know what, you don't have any experience. We don't. Good luck. Come back when you've done a few projects. They might tell you that. Maybe they'll welcome you with open arms and say, oh my gosh, come on in. We have a great project we'd like you to do. You just don't know. I can't tell you that you're going to have, I can tell you what to do. I don't know what kind of results you're going to have. Only you can learn that by making these calls and doing this outreach. So I strongly recommend all of that to say, I strongly recommend that you do a real mix, that you keep it mixed in the sense of online as well as face-to-face. Keep it mixed as well. Network. Make sure that you're sprinkling in some contact with people you already know who already trust you, that and asking for referrals. Do you know anybody that I might be able to help, or keep me in mind, that kind of thing. Approaching a couple of larger companies, ones that you know have a budget, maybe you know have a need. You just never know where that next opportunity is going to come from. So keep it mixed. And definitely go for level up 1 or 2, provided you feel comfortable doing that. If you think you're prepared for that, just know that they may push back and say, gosh, we really, you know, prefer to work with someone who's more seasoned. Okay, well, that's good learning. Now you again, how does that change your strategy? How do you move forward strategically, but still use these things to know they're building blocks and I'm learning? So I hope that's gives you a slightly different perspective. The challenge with getting off the ground with a business is you're so anxious to just get some money in the door, get some business in the door. I understand that, but it is, again, it's that slow down to speed up. Sit back and think about it from a strategic perspective and say, okay, yeah, I need to pay the bills and keep the lights on. I understand that. But how can I do this where I sprinkle in a little bit of everything and really give myself the best opportunity to be successful and learn a lot? You know, right now it's all about learning. All right. I hope that was helpful. Feel free to type any response that you have if there was something else. All right. And I saw your feedback there, Zelko. Thanks for the discussion. I just finished 2 pro bono case studies. Congratulations. That's great. And I'm quite close to arranging the first commercial client, but I would like to continue prospecting. Yes, definitely continue prospecting. And now that you have those case studies, that changes everything, doesn't it? Now you can approach a more sophisticated client and say, here's my samples, let's talk. It will make a difference. So congratulations on that. All right, Shannon, you're up next. I've been getting great feedback through being active on LinkedIn. Congratulations. And have just started the free month of premium. My question is, should I use InMails in the same way as warm emails, or should these just be more of an introduction type letter? Good question. I would be, you know, it's again, I hate to say it, but it really depends. It depends on, it's so important to use LinkedIn properly. And LinkedIn has been used and abused by a lot of people that just don't use the tool properly. And I think it's so important to use the tool the same way that you would. Think of it as going to a local networking event and walking in and meeting a prospect that you're really, really interested in. How would you talk to them? What would you say and what would you never say to that person face to face? That's kind of for me, the bottom line rule with LinkedIn is, am I saying something in writing and on LinkedIn that I would never say in person? If I was actually shaking their hand and saying, so tell me about your business, would I ask that question or would I make that same comment face to face? That's kind of my guideline. And that I hope is helpful for you, because I look at LinkedIn as one of those tools that if you do it right and you really treat it with respect, it's going to love you back, and you're going to get amazing results from using LinkedIn mindfully. That said, I think it depends on LinkedIn. The nice thing about the InMails is that they don't end up in a spam folder, right? So if you're on LinkedIn and someone sends you an InMail, you get it. I mean, it's not going to necessarily end up in a spam folder, and it might be a great way to get their attention. As long as you're careful, professional, and helpful in what you're sending them, then I see no reason why you couldn't use InMails the same way. Again, Shannon, trial and error. Try a couple. See what happens. See how people respond. You might not get the kind of response that you're looking for, or maybe it'll be wildly successful and you'll you'll decide to start purchasing your LinkedIn access and that's all you're going to use. I mean, again, I don't know what your industry is, who you're focusing on. Don't know how much time they spend on LinkedIn or how they interact with that tool. But until you have a better handle on that, I would say try a couple and see what happens. I wouldn't replace it altogether, but again, do a test, reach out to a few people, see how it goes, and see what kind of response you get. You might have wild success, which would be my hope. But I don't know until you, I think it's just trying it. But same thing is, if you do a test, jump back on the Facebook group and let us know how that goes. Definitely keep me up to date, because I want to see what kind of success you have. It really, every industry is different. And so it's hard to tell, gosh, will that be successful or not? I have no idea. You'll just have to give it a whirl. All right. Allison, question. When you sent a message to your whole network, did you send it to everyone in one shot or did you send individual messages? So I sent it in one bulk email. I think I had maybe 200 names on my list, 200 emails, maybe back then, maybe a little bit more than that. So I didn't have like thousands. And I've really worked to fine tune the email to sound as, to make it as comfortable as possible for me. So I think it's a matter of, I went through my list and thought about each person and thought about and reread my email and thought, how is this going to land on them? Okay. Is they going to receive this and be okay? You know, I kind of looked through my list and thought, you know, is this email going to be appropriate for each person after I wrote the email? And then I tweaked it and I tweaked it. And then I sent it out to, yes, I did send it all at once in one big batch. And, I was amazed at the response that I got, at the positive congratulations. People were like, wow, good for you, you know, that you went out on your own, so on and so forth. So it was, I got a lot of positive response from that. It was really great. Really great. So yeah, I would recommend it. And as long as you're comfortable, the other thing you could do, if you have a lot of names in your network, break it down in batches. There's no reason why you can't do so that you're comfortable and you're sure that the message is going to the right people and that you're happy with what you're sending. So that's another thing, is you could do it in waves, so to speak. So you've got maybe 50 at a time, something like that, just to make it a little less. Maybe that would be a, you know, an easier way to do it, but don't avoid doing it. Definitely, I would strongly recommend that you dive in and do it. But yeah, you could do it in waves, so to speak. So I hope that's helpful. Oh, and Shannon, you got another question. Great. Do you have any experience or knowledge of writers having a niche of writing for the government? As government contractors, I worked for state and federal government as a field biologist for over 10 years. Was initially thinking of making this my niche, but decided against it because I wasn't sure the opportunity. I recently came across an article about becoming a government contracted freelance writer and almost dropped my coffee. Apparently it is a thing. Just wondering if you have any additional information. It could be a niche I evolve into over time or an additional target market. I think as an additional target market, absolutely. I mean, you've already got a meeting tomorrow with a client, with a prospect, and I wouldn't abandon what you're doing at all. I mean, you're already seeing some value and you're getting some traction. So don't abandon what you're doing. You're heading in the right direction. But I see no reason why government contracted freelance writer, why not? I mean, do that too. That's really interesting. I can tell you that I have absolutely zero experience. I have not heard of that before. Ed may have. He's been at this a long time. I'm sure he's come across that before. But I think that sounds kind of cool. It would really be interesting to hear what that's about. Like, what I would do some Googling, you know, and see if you can find a government contracted freelance writer, you know, type that in, do a search and see if you can find some and see how they position themselves, see how they talk about what they do on their website or maybe on their LinkedIn page, their LinkedIn profile, see how they present themselves and do a little research to see if that's something. Would the writing still be interesting to you? Would it be, worthwhile. I would imagine, you know, it makes sense to me. I mean, the government needs writers no differently than any other business would. So it makes sense, but I would do a little bit of research into that, see what's out there, see if you can find some competitors, some writers that are already doing that to see what, you know, what are they writing about in their blog on their website? You know, are they posting things on LinkedIn? How are they connecting? And it's a whole different world. The government contracting is a different approach, as you know. So, and being a government contractor, the question too is, I know a number of companies, woman-owned companies, that get the WeBank certification. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's WBENC. It's woman-owned business enterprise something something certification. I don't remember exactly what the acronym stands for, but that allows them to get more work from the government being certified. It's a great deal of work, and I think it's kind of expensive to get that certification, but anyway, there's definitely some opportunities there to think of, you know, like minority-owned and woman-owned businesses do get preferential treatment from here in the U.S. for government contracts. So, but I'm not sure you even need that. There may be just being calling yourself a freelancer. You might not even need any of that. So, definitely check it out. Excellent. And Allison, let me just make sure. Yes, you're up next. Another question. When talking about going to networking events, you mentioned that's a good thing to do when you have your marketing messages worked out. So is it better to do this before going to these events? So Allison, I'm not sure what stage of the program you're in, but this is session one is the kind of thing I'm talking, your positioning statement, and talking about, you know, really writing, you know, if you've gotten through session one, session two, and session three, so the first three that are talking all about building your LinkedIn profile, that's where you're really crafting your message, and that's what I'm talking about. So, and yes, Shannon, WeBank, you got that correct. That's what we're talking about here, Allison, is that messaging that you crafted for your website, for your LinkedIn, in those first three sessions. That's the part when you start being able to say, I'm a writer specializing in blip, 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 or I help the healthcare, you know, companies in the healthcare industry create powerful marketing materials. You know, to be able to say that and practice it and let it kind of roll off your tongue. That's what I was talking about for a marketing message. And you want to be comfortable explaining yourself. And so the first three sessions of this program are designed to help you get comfortable with knowing who your target audience is, because you want to walk up to someone at a networking event and say, I help companies craft powerful marketing messages. And maybe it's, like I said, maybe your niche is or your target market is healthcare. Maybe it's IT. Maybe it's something like that, so that you can express that comfortably. And people say, hey, do you, because sometimes what will happen, especially at a networking event, if they meet you and they like you, they say, you know, I know you specialize in IT, but would you work with my company? Would you help me? And you can always say, sure, let's talk about it. You know, let's talk about what it is that, that you need. So just because you specialize in a niche or in a particular target market doesn't mean that you can never work with anyone else. That's, as a matter of fact, it's rare that people just stick to one. And especially in the beginning, you're going to want to be a little bit more open. If you find somebody local that needs your help, definitely, you know, take that opportunity to work with them. All right. And Felicia, thank you for sharing that link. That's awesome. Yeah, and that program, I know some companies, some women who've gone through that particular program. It is extensive. It's a lot of work, and I believe it's fairly costly. So it's not something that I would rush to do, but just be aware that that's out there. You may find that as a freelance writer that you don't need to do that, that you could, there's probably plenty of work without having to get any kind of a certification like that, would be my guess. All right. Well, this has been a terrific call. Thank you everybody for being so involved and sharing in the chat with each other and being supportive. That's really, really, really great. I want to finish with a final question. I want to kind of wrap things up here with you folks by asking what your top action item is for the next week or so. And it doesn't have to be anything we talked about, but just what have you got on deck that you're going to be working on in the next week or so? And some of you shared that at the beginning of the call, but is there anything in particular that is your top action item, number one, most important thing you want to be working on in the next week to 2 weeks? All right. Susan says getting better at using LinkedIn for prospecting. Just takes time and practice. Felicia, actively prospecting. I would almost change the actively to consistently. Seriously, building a program that you know you can stick with long term is probably from a prospecting, from that perspective, being able to do that repeatedly, every day, over and over, same amount, or every week. That's definitely, consistency is key. So even if you only send out 5 emails a day, that's okay. You don't have to send out hundreds, but make sure you do it every day. So that by the end of the week, you've got your 25 emails that went out this week or whatever your target is. Allison says, identifying solid prospects to contact. Awesome. Shannon says, finishing the LLC paperwork and continue to prospect. Good for you. Yeah, definitely a good thing to do. It takes a little bit of effort to get that paperwork done, but it's worth it. Hey, Laird, I didn't even see you on the call. Glad you're here. I'm not sure when you came on. I didn't even see you sneak on there. So, but Laird says, complete my Why Me page so I can launch my website. Hey, congratulations. Definitely. And Zelko's going to continue prospecting also. So good for you. Consistency, like I said, it's all consistently get those, get into a rhythm and stick with it. That's the best. Ah, Laird says, been here all the time, quite introverted. It's okay. It's quite all right. I'm glad you at least popped in here to answer our questions. So thank you. Good to have you here. And I hope it's been helpful. All right. All right. Well, thank you again, everybody, for being here. Thank you so much for participating. The active participation makes it valuable for everyone. So thank you for the questions and for participating in the chat. Please stay in touch on Facebook. Use the Facebook group. It's a place to share your insights, to ask questions, to connect with Ed as well as with me. Take advantage of that while you're in the program, and definitely want to see you in there and active. And everybody have a terrific rest of the week. There's only a day left, but welcome again to 2020. And I look forward to seeing you on Facebook. Take care, and we'll talk to you guys soon.